Welcome to episode 39 of Rail Talk. As you can see, we are here in picturesque Ocala, Florida at Mark Cassie's Training Center. We promised you a special show, and here it is. Damn, is it going to be special. I'm Joe Bianca. I'm an ownership advisor at West Point Thoroughbreds. Thrilled to be here with you, John, and with my favorite adopted father, Len Green, at some point.
Be careful what you wish for, Joe Bianca. Jonathan Green, general manager of DJ Stable. How beautiful is this? It's picturesque weather. We have some great guests coming up. Patty Wolf might even come and make an appearance here because she's down here in Ocala, because there's never a camera that she doesn't love. And it's just going to be a really fun episode. Number 39, Joe, 39. They said it wouldn't be done.
They said specifically about 39?
39. They said we'd never get to 40.
You might get to 38.
That's right.
But 39.
39 is the cliff.
Let's start the show. So this is the second Rail Talk we're doing from somebody's house. This is a little bit more glamorous than my apartment in Brooklyn. We're here at Mark Cassie's Training Center to talk to the man himself. Mark Cassie, welcome to the stage.
Oh, thanks for having me.
We're so stoked to have you, and it's beautiful, obviously, to be here. And we're going to get ready to see the Sandman Breeze in a little bit. Can you just talk a little bit about how he's come along since the sale? Because he only galloped at the sale, so he's obviously, you can wind him up a little more maybe than you would a horse directly off the breeze. What's he done so far, and how's he doing?
He's doing great. He's had a couple just very easy breezes. He's actually going to go half today. He's also been going to the gate. He's been to the gate. We have a professional gateman here that oversees all our gate horses. So he's been doing very well. Right now, I'm a simple guy, Joe. I learned this in first grade, A, B, C, D. Mm-hmm. Right now, I'm going to give him an A.
Awesome.
Great.
I'd love to hear it.
And for those of you who don't remember, Sandman, of course, is the Tappet colt that we bought out of the March sale together in partnership. West Point DJ Stable. Yeah, Joe and I own about that much of the horse.
I own zero.
but Mark, you've trained so many champions and so many well-bred horses. Does a horse that costs seven figures with a big partnership group with that kind of pedigree, does that make you more nervous, less nervous, or he's just another horse as far as you're concerned in the barn?
It doesn't make me nervous. You know, I've been doing this for a long time and love to have him. I mean, I'm very happy with him, but no, it doesn't make me nervous at all. I mean, yeah.
And like Joe was saying, he just galloped on the racetrack during the March sale, which is very unusual, but that was part of the Lothenbach dispersal. They mandated that all their horses gallop. What did you see in him galloping that made you say he's the one?
I just thought he moved well, and it wasn't just that, but it was also, you know, his physical. I just thought he was in his pedigree. You know, all those things we look for.
Can you talk a little bit about this place? Because I've never been here. I've seen videos that you know, you've sent for breezes, but this is beautiful. How long have you been here? How did you come to train here? Tell me a little bit about the history of this place.
Well, right now you probably hear the tractor getting ready to go by. So we're in the middle, we're harrowing. My wife and Tina and I, we've had it. Tina and I have been married for 23 years. I think I first got my first little 10 acres here 30 years ago. We now have about 140, and about, I want to say 7 or 8 years ago, I kind of came to a part where I was like, either I'm going to go big or go home. And so I went big. And so my wife and I, we spent a lot of money and we built this training center. Right. It was always here. We just took it to another level. And, you know, it's worked out really well for us. I have probably 10 team members that have been with me 30 years plus. So we've been doing this for a long time. We've had a lot of good horses go over this racetrack. And this is kind of my Fair Hill. This is my Palm Meadows. This is my Palm Beach Downs, mm-hmm. my Payson Park. Everything we do it here. If we're not happy with a horse, say at Gulfstream, we're not happy the way he trains, that horse will come here will observe it. And until I'm happy again, he'll stay here. Mm-hmm. And so this is where my concentration is. And it works really good for us.
Yeah. And Mark, you're a two-time Hall of Famer, obviously here in the States and also in Canada. And year after year, you seem to dominate up in Woodbine. What gives you that edge to be able to have your horses run and run so well during the Woodbine meet?
Well, obviously, you know, that's something that over the years, John, that we have concentrated on. Obviously, if you're going to run at Woodbine, you want Canadian breeds. The other thing that's really good about Canada is they have a wonderful turf course. You have two grade ones winning your ends. We've won them numerous times. We've been to, I don't even know how many Breeders' Cups. But more importantly, the thing that I do like about Woodbine is that if you look at, I think I've had six Eclipse Award winners, six Breeders' Cup, five of those have some fingerprint somewhere at Woodbine. I've used it as it's a great place to get horses ready. You know, a lot of people say, oh, Toronto, Canada, they think it's a long ways away. It really isn't. It's about the same as if we're going to Belmont or you know, Saratoga. It's 7 hours from Saratoga. So, you know, we go back and forth a lot. Obviously, Kentucky's good too, but it's what we concentrate on. You know, you go to New York and you got to deal with Chad Brown and Todd Pletcher. You go to Kentucky, you got Steve Asmussen and Brad Cox. And when you go to Toronto, to Woodbine,
you got Mark Cassie.
You got to deal with you.
Yeah. It's my house.
Yeah. No, well, a quick follow-up on that, because I had a West Point partner ask me, we were talking about you, and I assumed you were a Canadian guy before I knew you, just because I saw how much you dominated up at Woodbine. Do you have any personal footprint up there? Do you have a house or anything? Do you stay up there?
I have over the years had farms and stuff. No, I don't. I don't have anything there now. I do have three Canadian children that right. are there, but I was born in Indianapolis.
Yeah.
So I learned about Woodbine with my dad when I was 12. Mm-hmm. I went up there and then... It's just the Canadian people are good. Woodbine is just a tremendous facility. And I can tell you, I wouldn't be in two Hall of Fames if it wasn't for Woodbine. It just allows me to develop horses. I think it's a great place to develop horses.
And Mark, I don't know if you realize, but you and Joe have something else in common, and that is you're on the advisory board of HISA. I think your window is closing. You're gonna step down from it at your term. And Joe has recently been nominated to like an up and coming group. I don't remember the exact name.
The next gen advisory board.
They started yesterday.
Yeah, the first meeting was yesterday.
Which is good.
Do you have any advice for him?
No, I'm glad they're doing it. I guess maybe, you know, the first group, everybody kind of were the older, wiser, well, maybe well, not wise.
That's your word.
Let's just go
open
older.
To interpretation.
But I think it's important, you know, they're the future.
Right.
And you can make a difference there. HISA has made a difference. Some people, you know, in anything, I always say with assets, there's liabilities. So... but it's important. I'm glad they're going to get there, and you can make a difference. So it's not easy, but it's worth being on there. And I looked at the group, and a great, great group of young people, and they're our future, and they're important. I'm at the part where my goal is to make horse racing better than when I started.
Right.
And if you look around, horse racing's been very, very good to me. Mm-hmm. And I love it. And I have two sons that are Norman, who's, you know, has done extremely well. Yeah. I'm proud of him. And then I have Colby, who is now a big part of running this training center, and he's learning. So the future's very important to me.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And Norm has done great. He's, you know, your legacy lives through him and your other children, and yes, you have a lot to be proud of.
I am.
Last question from me. You know, you were one of the ones that I think started the push to ban clenbuterol. Mm-hmm. I remember you being very vocal about that, and I give you a lot of credit that the industry has moved to do that. There was a recent announcement that the sales companies were going to unify their drug policy. Do you think that that's a good first step? Do you think that there's more to come in that realm? Where are you at on the industry's issues with drugs, particularly the sales?
So I'm only going to speak for me. You know, I am on the board of OBS, but yes, it was a good start. It was a good start. We still have to, I'm not overly still happy with the clenbuterol deal. We still need to fix it. You know, Joe, this will be the first Kentucky Derby that will be run that horses wouldn't have been on clenbuterol. Mm. Up until HISA took over late May, a horse could be treated with clenbuterol for until 2 weeks before.
Wow. Mm.
Now that's all changed and that's better, but we still have to do more. If I have anything to do with it in 2025, if clenbuterol's found anywhere, the horse is going to be returned, not sold, and it's a terrible drug. It's a terrible drug and needs to be gone. And I've fought and fought for that, mm-hmm. And I'm going to continue.
All right. Well, Mark, thank you so much for hosting us. Thank you, as always, for the insights. And let's go see the big horse train.
Yeah, please get ready to go. Yeah. That's yeah. They're thanks, giving Mark. Me these. Oh, shoot. I don't want to break this.
Next up in the slightly warm seat here at Mark Cassie's Training Center is the CEO of West Point Thoroughbreds, Terry Finley. Welcome to the show.
Awesome to be on. I feel good to follow our boy Mark Cassie.
Yeah,
I think I've known Mark for 30 years. We bought a horse from him at Barrett's in, like, I don't know, 1997. He ran all of the Mangorian horses. You remember,
yep.
Harry Mangorian, he did such a good job for Mr. M, so, yeah. as they called him. So.
Exactly. And just for our fans at home, Barrett's was actually the fourth auction house that is no longer in existence. That's how long ago the story was, right?
It's actually been a while.
Right.
So we're not just here to have Terry on the show. We're all convened here to watch Sandman breed. Sandman was the $1.2 million tapping colt that West Point and DJ bought at OBS March. He just went a half mile, looked great. Can you talk a little bit about how that partnership came together? Because a lot of people are giving me the credit. Many people are saying that it was because of me and because of the show.
Don't worry.
I don't take the credit. But so, in all seriousness, can you talk about how that came together?
Well, I tell you, we're going to hold the credit in abeyance for a little while.
That's right.
Maybe for about 18 months, and then we'll circle back and we'll ascertain if we're going to give you. But you and John, obviously, you know, we've owned a couple horses together, but we endeavored, I don't know, 6 months ago to do more. And obviously with that consignment and they all gallop. So right. We just thought it'd be a good play, and everything worked out. You know, those things, I'm not sure people really get set into those things a month before the sale.
Right.
Oftentimes it happens, mm-hmm. I mean, literally 10 minutes before the sale.
Right.
And the good thing is, if it happens 10 minutes before the sale, you know, we get a feel, right? Everybody gets a feel. If it feels right, you do it. If it doesn't feel right, you kind of go to the other side of the ring. And I think that's the best part of it is if your gut tells you to go ahead, you do it.
Yeah, so. I just got a quick follow-up on the horse, because obviously you mentioned that he just galloped. He didn't breeze at the sale. As someone who's been evaluating horses for decades now, has been to a ton of these sales, analyzing breezes, how does that stack up for you in terms of evaluation when the horse just gallops? Do you like it better? Do you think it's a little bit more of a mystery? How did you feel about that?
Well, I think it is a mystery, right? Because there are some horses, they'll gallop in a beautiful fashion and they go faster, and all of a sudden they're not as pretty, mm-hmm. and they're not as efficient. Others are just the opposite. You know, they're all over the place, but then when they really speak and they breeze, everything comes together. Right, it takes a special horse to be a really beautiful galloper. And then when he goes faster or she goes faster, everything stays in place. And I think this is a colt, as we agree, John, right, that everything has stayed in place. But you hold your breath, you know, when they gallop. And, of course, you know, we'll talk about that, I'm sure. But, you know, speed is good at these sales, but it also speed is not so good. And right. And so we, I think it sent a signal to the market that you can still get a lot of money for a horse that just gallops.
Right, absolutely. And, Joe, I don't know if you realize, but, like, Terry and I have been texting back and forth for almost a year about, hey, we need to find something together, we need to find a good one together, and just we never landed on that horse at the same time where we said, oh my God, this is the one. And I think you actually, I still have the text, you actually texted me saying, John, I know we've been kind of playing footsie for the past year or so, I found one. And I was like, okay, I hope it's the Tappet. And that was kind of how it was born into it and the whole thing. But the funny thing about it, and I hope you don't mind me disclosing it to the audience, was, you know, you and I were talking about, okay, what do you think the horse is going to bring? And we realized very quickly, almost like an hour before the horse went in the ring, we needed more reinforcements. I mean, we needed to be able to not only, you know, stack up and to use, you know, the military version, we needed to have as much ammo as possible. And that's why we called in some other partners on it. But the partnership's been great. The horse looks great. And now we just have to figure out, hopefully, how many tickets we need for next year's first weekend in May. But you've had a lot of really good horses in partnership. And, you know, whether it's Flight Line or I mean, they're countless. What are the good and the pros and the cons of having like a big group owning an expensive horse?
Well, that's a great question because we talk about that, and I think one time or now, John, you're starting to see, you know, the first and second iterations of the big partnerships that put together sole owners. Right. They're not always easy.
No,
you know, most of the time there's a challenge because, you know, owners that are accustomed to being on their own and accustomed to engaging directly with the trainer. And in a big partnership, obviously that doesn't happen. So, you know, I think some of these partnerships, they'll continue, but others won't. Right. And you know, you just have to have the right mix of people,
that's
right? Just like anything, a club, a gathering, a group. It's all about the people, and not to say a person that doesn't get along or isn't a good fit is a bad person.
Right.
It's just that particular group of owners.
Right.
It's just not the right fit or the right time, as I say.
Yeah, there, and any, like Joe, like we've said before, any mix of people can own a bad horse. That's never a problem. You drop it down to $10,000 claim in and it's over. It's, you know, when the horses get good, that's when you start to see really, you know, the measure of the man. And that's why we felt so comfortable in going with West Point. And I'm glad the people that you've collected to be a part of it, because it's going to be exciting. And we hope it's going to be a good problem.
Yeah,
totally. And one of the things, honestly, that I've loved about West Point, I say this to people sometimes, that it's kind of like experiencing life through your child's eyes. That's my feeling. It's like when I introduce new partners to the game, they're so excited, and they're just as like a lifelong dream for a lot of people. Have you experienced that? Like, you've brought in a lot of new people into the game over the years. You know, what's it like to be with someone who's so wide-eyed, and it must like reinvigorate you if necessary over the years?
It does, Joe. You know, it you know, brings it back. Obviously, we talked a little about all the things we could talk about on a show like today.
We will.
and we got a little bit of time, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
but at the essence of our business, obviously the horses, but also people that get exposed to our industry. So you're right. It is right. Reaffirming of, you know, why we all love the business, to see somebody that is introduced to the business and they, you know, almost to a person say, man, I wish I would have gotten this business sooner.
Yeah, totally. Yeah,
no question about it. And you've evolved as an individual coming to the business and getting, you know, smaller groups and now more expensive groups. You've moved from your home state to Kentucky. You've gone on to become on a board member, to executive board member on a lot of these, you know, top groups. How are you seeing your influence in the industry now, from a top-down view?
Well, you know, I don't know if you knew this, but a lot of people have opinions in our business.
Really?
Go figure.
On this show. And they're smart people. They're smart people. And so, like, one of the things, and we talked about it a little bit, mm-hmm. it really does, I, it, doesn't work with the people who think that they're going to be most effective if they're the loudest voice in the room. And I know sometimes that's their personality, but I have evolved in the sense that, you know, you have to work through it, and you have to bring people into the fold.
Right.
Even though you might not agree with everything they say, or you identify their bias, right? We all have biases.
Right.
I think somebody said, like, everybody wants to change the industry except when it impacts
them. You're right.
So,
right.
So like, but that's human nature. That's not sure. Our business. That's sure. Anybody, you know, the NFL or any industry where you have people that are looking at their self-interest. So
right.
I think the more we just identify that and we work, so that's in response to your question. It's like, look, we have to evolve, right? We're not going to have a revolution because that's just not the way our industry is set up. We have to evolve. And I was talking to Joe. I truly believe that the last 5 years of our industry and the changes and the advancements, right, have been that 5 year period has been the best 5 year period that I can remember.
Yeah.
And so, yes, you can bring this up and bring that up. But we also have had the safety, mm-hmm. side of our business just advance, the integrity side.
Right.
We put some real bad guys in jail.
Right.
I say we.
Yeah.
But like so many things have happened. We've had,
right.
Over the course of the industry cooperation and things. So, and we're addressing and we're having the hard conversations.
Right.
And you read textbooks and you learn about business. Really the industries and the companies that have the hard conversations are the ones that, they advance.
Yeah, they advance. No, absolutely. And when did you think there was ever going to be a day that all three major sales companies would agree
right.
on medication? I mean,
yeah.
that wouldn't have happened, two
yeah.
years, three, 5 years ago.
It would not have, John. And I would say, kudos to them.
Absolutely.
Kudos to everybody, the buyers and sellers that were part of it. But really, the genesis of all those changes was HISA.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
no,
and so you can bang and you can beat up on HISA, but man, they're starting to take hold in a bigger and bigger way. You
right.
talked about the advisory committee.
Right.
I know the horsemen's group that Mark is on, like you talk to them, like, I know they get frustrated some, but overall you say, have you been able to impact change? Every person that I've talked to has said yes.
Yes. Yeah.
So like, man, we got some good stuff going on.
Absolutely.
And to the people who they promote the fact that they would have thought that it came and it hit the street with no hiccups.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're unreasonable.
Right.
I just don't, like, I just say, like, you lose a lot of credibility when you promote the fact that
right.
This whole thing's going to unwind 80 years of dysfunction
right.
and just come out of the box. So
absolutely.
Just got
That's
a lot of
point.
Good stuff going on.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's like, I mean, people finally are sensing that we have a level playing field.
Right.
And like, to think that in 2018 that we would have been in 2024 and
right.
feeling better about a level playing field,
right.
I think people would have said, good luck with that.
Right.
Yeah. Well, like you said, having the hard conversations, like that's where you start from. And we were talking about this a little bit earlier, was it's so easy to be anti-HISA. It's so easy to be anti-this, anti-that, especially when there's a new regulatory body that comes in. But can you talk a little bit about the importance of being for something and whether or not, Lisa Lazarus she's an open book
right.
and she's willing to listen to any ideas, any suggestions.
Yeah.
Can you just talk a little bit about her leadership and the importance of being pro something in this business?
Right. From what I've seen, if you say you don't have a seat or you hadn't had a seat at the table, that's your fault.
Right.
I'm talking about in the HISA world.
Yeah.
That's your fault. From what I've seen, if there's somebody or some organizations that think that that's incorrect, I'd like them to put forward the facts
right.
that support their position. So that's one. If you look at history, most of the advancements, they come from either people or entities that are for something
right.
and they move forward. things don't work in our world, in the human race, right, when you're against something. And like, okay, it's easy to be against something.
Right.
It takes integrity, it takes strength, it takes perseverance to be for something. And I think that's what we're experiencing with HISA. And I'm very proud of the people that have put a lot of time and effort into HISA, because look, there are plenty of people who are training horses that are doing just fine and could come to the barn every morning and train and make their 10%, but they go the extra mile and they put the time and effort in, and we've got people and organizations that are constantly banging on HISA. Like, I do think people are getting tired of it.
I agree.
Yeah.
I think people are like, enough already.
Yeah.
And I hope people that support that are seeing and are being open with themselves and honest with themselves. Like, the train's left the station, baby. Get on the train.
That's right.
Exactly.
That's right.
Well, I had a quick follow-up on the sales company's announcements about unifying the drug policy. As someone who's been coming to these sales for a long time, and it's, what I was saying was that there's too much guesswork. You know, you kind of just have to take all of like the circumstantial evidence of who you think is doing something nefarious and who you think is on the level. Do you think we're getting to a place where there's more transparency and there's more like there's going to be more empirical evidence about who to trust, who not to trust, and you don't just kind of have to like suss it together through all of your experience?
Yes, I do. And I appreciate what the sales companies have done. Look, they represent the buyer, mm-hmm, you know, and they don't make any bones about that. Of course, they have to take the interests. I said seller.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Of course, they have to take the interests of the buyers into account. But one thing I'll say to the sales companies, like, look, we buy horses. Plenty of other people buy horses. Like, give us a chance on the sales slip to get tested.
Right.
That horse. Yep. A hair follicle test for clenbuterol. I know Mark was talking about clenbuterol. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't say we don't have a problem at the sales,
right,
with a clenbuterol without authenticating that.
Right.
And you trust, but you verify.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to take care of the clenbuterol problem. Just give buyers a chance to do a hair follicle test,
right,
and to have a couple of those tests come back and disqualify the horse and the person, and I'll venture to say the clenbuterol problem will be gone.
Yeah.
So look, we're headed down the road of, right, of changes. Let's get the substantive changes on the board and,
right,
activated on.
Yep, absolutely. No, it's an excellent point. I'm gonna shift gears on you for my last question, which is Flight Line. Obviously, you know, you guys were on the map. It just magnified your impact on the industry. His falls are coming out this year. What have you seen, if any, of the little Flightliners?
Yeah, we have eight. You know, we hadn't been in the breeding business, John, and I didn't want to be in the breeding business until we had a shot to do it,
right,
at the very top end of the business. So, all in all, I think the vibe is very good. Now, we all know that when you have those top end stallions, the vibe is going to be good,
sure,
whether it's accurate or it's a manufactured vibe, which, right, we know has happened.
Yeah.
I hope and I think I sense that it's a true vibe.
Right.
But, you know, the proof will be in the pudding.
Yeah.
Well, Terry, thank you so much for stopping by. Busy week for you and all of us at West Point. Appreciate the time and the insights, as always.
Always a pleasure.
So we are so thrilled and honored, as always we are, to bring in the founder of the Green Group and DJ Stable, man about town in Ocala here, Len Green. Welcome to the show.
Hey, it is my pleasure. I'll take over the rest of the show if it's okay with you guys.
That's normal standard procedures.
So we can get right out of here if you just, right, want to do it solo. But yeah, let's talk a little bit about the Green Group, which is the number one accounting firm in the horse business. Terry said you're approaching 1,000 clients now. Is that true?
1,000 horse clients.
Yeah.
There are over 4,000 regular clients. There are other people who have money, but they're slowly but surely getting into the horse business. And they find out, you know, all the tax advantages, as well as the thrills and everything else involved in it.
Yeah.
And I think, but I think for an accounting firm to succeed, Joe, you can't be like every other accounting firm. Same as this program succeeds, because it's not like other programs that think they're doing the same thing. You got to do things differently, kind of thing. So we decided right off that we were only going to be involved in industries that we really could give back, that we had the knowledge unique knowledge for to do it. And the horse business is one of those, because no other owner owns, you know, 800 horses, right. Okay, or 200 horses, okay, is there the right number? Or, okay, has won as many races, you know, as we have. But we're involved in every aspect of it. Mm-hmm. So why would you go to a mechanic who doesn't know anything about cars? You'd only go to somebody who knows something about it. And that's really what's happened. That's why when we advertise, when you speak so well of just give me a chance to take a shot at something. We have never seen a tax return now that we have not been able to save money on. Okay, people say to me, well, we go with a national firm. Well, national firm people aren't there anymore. You're only as good as the person doing it, kind of thing. And here, you have all this experience, and we really want to save you money.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're like we're 2 days after 3 days. I don't forget what day it is down here. After tax day, you do have the complimentary consultation for Rail Talk listeners. Does that still apply for next year?
It applies with every single person that I look at, and the fact that it's been on Rail Talk has resulted in an awful lot of people calling me and saying, "Hey, I heard this." Beautiful. From prominent people. Okay, and you know, so there's a real reason that we're involved in this. And yes, we spell it out again. If you send your return in on a complimentary and confidential basis, okay, I personally look at it. And for every single return that I've ever looked at, I can save them money. Now, I got a lot more experience than most people who prepare the returns for these people. Okay, and I have a real interest in wanting to save money.
All you, bro.
So we're here with Glenn Green from the Green Group. Can I call you Glenn? Is that okay?
Jim and Glenn Green.
Jim and Glenn, exactly. So one of the things that I always enjoy about coming to Ocala is obviously looking at the horses and trying to figure out what our next great horse is going to be. But I've noticed that when you walk around, when we're looking at horses, you're also talking to the consigners and talking to other owners and stuff like that, and you're taking notes. What does that all do for you when the sale is all over? What do you use those notes for?
Well, again, I really believe that you can advertise as much as you want on shows like this, and you get planted in the back of people's minds a name. But it's till you see the face, until you see the person, that it really does. And invariably, I will come to a sale like this and say, okay, here on my agenda is to meet 40 people that are clients of mine who are either selling horses or I know can be there. And I am betting, okay, that at least of that group, okay, there'll be at least 10 or 15 that say to me, hey, I have somebody I want to recommend you to, or here is somebody who's here. And you know, it's invariable. That's how you keep it going. Okay, it's the personal touch plus the advertising.
Absolutely. Well, and I get this question sometimes from prospective West Point partners, you know, what kind of tax advantages are there for getting involved in racehorse ownership? And I always tell them, I'm not smart enough to know that, but I know a guy who is. So without giving away the secret sauce or too many of the you know, loopholes or whatever there are, what are some of the broad tax advantages of owning horses?
Well, okay, there's two aspects of that question. Number one, okay, most accountants are very, very busy doing everything, okay? We're busy, but we stay up on the horse cases mm-hmm. and the horse law, and I'll even tell you how many senators it'll take to then pass the new Child Care Act, which has a provision in it to reinstate the expense write-off. 100% expense for. We stay up on that because we're involved mm-hmm. in that. And then number two, what people say, well, you can only get 60% write-off now when you buy a horse. That's only one of four ways that you can depreciate a horse. Okay? And even if you take 60 now, what happens to the other 40? Well, do I ever get it back or not? Believe it or not, it becomes a net operating loss carry forward, and you can take 100% of it next year. So, okay, but in addition to that, you can still write off more than 100%, up to 100% of the horse if under a different method, or you can take different methods of depreciation and you get 2/3 of it. I mean, but most accountants will tell you what the basics are. Mm-hmm. Now, if somebody asks me about a different industry, I'm not going to be able to do that for them, Joe. But for this industry, I can. And then they say to me, well, I'm in West Point. Okay, do I just get the K-1 and is that it? No. What happens when you go up to Saratoga and you have breakfast and you're networking, et cetera? That's all becomes deductible, mm-hmm. your trip up there. Okay? So there's many aspects of this. It's not just this way.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. Now, and Len, you've been in the business for 40 plus years. You've seen, you know, it grow and evolve and change. We asked Terry Finley and Mark Cassie both about their insight and thoughts on HISA and how that's changed the industry. You're a smart guy. Can you give us some insight on how this is changing the business?
I was very impressed the first time I heard Lisa on your show. Okay. I mean, here's a young woman who's intelligent and she can make decisions. And I said, gee, if I ever could go one-on-one with her, which we had the opportunity to when we flew home, I can tell her what she's up against. Okay, and it's going to be one of the most difficult jobs she has. But the most important thing I said to her is, try to get some input from different people in the industry, not necessarily the people who are officers or officials in the business, but people who are on the ground, who have a different sight and aspect of it. So, Joe, I really applaud her on this newest thing, getting young people into it. Okay. I thought the criteria was you had to have a beard, but I see that
she got a podcast.
Or a podcast or something like that. But I really believe that those are very, very important. I think HISA is the best thing that's happened in this industry. John, you and I mean, we ran in certain tracks where we had less than a third of a chance to win because two or three of the trainers were winning two-thirds of the races. And they don't investigate you at parks until you win two stake races, and then maybe they look at you or something. But, I mean, we won championships up there, and we're not running there anymore. And there's a reason for it. And it needs to take these steps, which are hard steps. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be blips in the road. We're going to hurt little people or think people. But as I said to Lisa the other day, I said, as long as you learn from them, that's the most important thing. I think it's the best thing that's happened to the industry.
Right. Yeah, just to switch gears a little bit, I love listening to you because you have such a great historical context of racing because you've been doing it for so long.
Because he's old.
You said it, not me. This is why I'm your favorite son, because I don't spell these things out. But I would love to know, like, if I just asked you, what's your favorite memory from DJ Stable over the years? You know, I think of Wonder Wheel a couple years ago. I was honored to be there at the Breeders' Cup when you guys won. That was a champion. Jaywalk was a champion. But just quick reaction, favorite memory over all the years doing DJ Stable.
I think there's two of them, Joe, if mm-hmm. I could.
Yeah.
Okay. One was a horse called Residian, okay, which was our first $5,000 winner at Monmouth, where I ended up actually ordering 20 pictures.
So okay. We lost money. Even though we won the first, we lost money in the photo expenses.
And then we had a horse called Do It With Style, which had an interesting story behind it, okay, where the horse was bought by some young kid, okay, who went over the budget, so I made him send it back, and he bought it again, and I said, how could you buy it again if you didn't have the money? He said, Mom gave me the rest of the money, and it turned out to be Do It With Style, and then we went to the Ashland, and I had never been to Kentucky racetrack before, and we were up high, okay, and I'm used to, in every other track, walking down the steps and running into the paddock. Okay, Do It With Style one. Okay, and I stopped to pray for a few minutes, and I looked up, and there was nobody else in the box, and I couldn't see where they were because they went downstairs across the infield. Okay, so I started running down there, and I had no credentials, and they wouldn't let me on the track and go across. But we finally got there. That was probably, since I think it was the first graded stake.
First grade one winner we had, for sure.
Yeah, kind of thing. So again, those are thrills. But the real thrill is going to be the next time we get in. Mm-hmm. And it's so hard, and you get hyped up, okay, because of Hades, okay? And then you take steps to say, okay, if we do something, can we still get in? And you take the steps, and then the horse doesn't do it. But again, as disappointed you might be at that, I saw Rick Mendez the other day, and his horse was in the Derby, and now it broke down. It's not going to race again. So, you know, here, you got to, you know, it's got to be the next. It's got to be here looking at the track and seeing how many two-year-olds you have. Mm-hmm. It's got to be going over to the OBS sale and still buying two-year-olds, even though you have enough two-year-olds, with the criteria being, hey, can we find one that's better than the one we have before? When you stop doing that, I think that's when you start declining.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's always, just to interrupt for a second, I think it's you're always changing and evolving too, Joe. Like, our game plan from DJ Stable wasn't necessarily to come down here and buy a bunch of horses, but then Rapoli announced that he wasn't buying anything, and John Stewart announced that he wasn't buying anything. Mm-hmm. And we looked around and we said, well, it's a West Point and a couple other owners, end users, and us, and that's it. So all of a sudden you go from being, well, we don't really need any more because we have all these horses here with Cassie and some with Orsino, to, wow, this is a great opportunity because right. The horses aren't going to be as expensive.
Yeah, absolutely.
Until somebody walks in and John says, oh, he's going to outbid you. And I said, no, he's not, John.
but to your credit, you let him outbid you.
I let him
outbid you. Good. That's good. You did knife his tire of his car, but you did let him get the horse.
Nancy Kerrigan.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, we are from Jersey, you know. So.
If you ever have a chance to watch Land at the auction, you should, because it's the subtlest bidding I've ever seen in my life. This is it. Like half of an index finger, right? Well,
except that yesterday, you say that, but yesterday we were trying to get the bid spotter's attention and he wasn't looking, and Len was getting a little pissed off. And so finally he got the guy's attention and the bid spotter was watching. And then the next five bids from Len were... he was throwing curveballs. He was going like that.
See? That's why we love Len. He adapts.
He adapts and overcomes. That's right.
Except then... I got the horse, but then I didn't get the horse. Right. And John says,
nope, you don't want to mess with it. They're running you, baby.
Oh, man. Well, Len, thank you so much for stopping by. And by the way, if you want to hit Len up for that complimentary, confidential, consultation, those are
with guaranteed results.
Exactly. Guaranteed. To save you taxes, go to greenco.com, or what's the phone number?
732-634-5100.
All right. Well,
he's a numbers guy.
Exactly. But Len, thank you so much for coming on, for the sponsorship, and just for your insights as always.
It's nice to be with a celebrity.
and your son.
Thank you, brother.
All right, so that's gonna do it for episode 39 of Rail Talk Live. Not live. On scene, I always say live, on scene at Mark Cassie's Training Center here in Ocala. Obviously, we just had Len Green on, and we appreciate him and the Green Group and their sponsorship. We also have several other dazzling, fantastic sponsors. Faisig Tipton, appreciate Faisig Tipton sponsorship. Don't forget the May, we got digital sales every month, but then we also have the Mid-Atlantic May sale, which is coming up May 20th through the 21st. Everybody here at OBS is excited about the two-year-olds, so that Faisig sale always has big fireworks, so we're looking forward to that in Timonium right after the Preakness. And of course, shout out to TaylorMade. Appreciate TaylorMade and their support. May 1st is the deadline for some of those yearling sales, so go to TaylorMade's website. They got a handy countdown clock, and they'll take care of you. We always say they take care of their clients and their horses. A plus care for both, so appreciate TaylorMade's sponsorship. And that's going to do it for our show here. John, thank you for stopping by.
Always a pleasure.
Appreciate it. Thank you for...
I can't believe we're like this close to each other.
Oh,
like,
man.
I can really touch you. Oh, that's a little soft.
I can hug you. So it's always great to see you and talk to you, especially in person. Shout out to Len Green for stopping by. Thanks to Terry Finley as well. And Mark Cassie for hosting us and coming by and chatting with us. Thanks to Patty Wolf, our producer, and our associate producers. Nathan Wilkinson, who gets to go first because I'm looking right at him right now.
Look at that. He's so cute today.
Anthony LaRocca, Aaliyah LaRocca, and Julia Agresta. Appreciate y'all for tuning in. We'll see you next week back here on Rail Talk.